Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check. Testing, 1, 2, 3. Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check.
Welcome to the Quick Restart. We cover 73 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
And we do it fast.
Welcome back to the Quick Restart podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again, once and for all, by Quintastic Quint. We are less than 5 hours removed from the conclusion of the 2019 NCAA championship game. We saw the Virginia Cavaliers come into Lincoln Financial Field and hand the defending champion, Yale Bulldogs, a 13-9 defeat. The Cavaliers are back on the mountaintop again for the sixth time, the first time since 2011. And I gotta say, I'm really surprised and really impressed, not just about the outcome, but also the manner in which it unfolded. And for me, this game was a game that was decided in three ways, depending on the time of the game. The first 5 minutes, I attribute to Alex Rode. The next 20 minutes, I was so impressed by the length and toughness of Virginia's defense and their defensive midfielders. And then the last 35 minutes, I really thought, like, with very few exceptions, Yale played a sloppier brand of lacrosse than we are used to seeing that prevented them from being able to get into the game until after it was out of reach. How did it unfold from your perspective?
Well, I agree with you. The only thing that surprises me was the ease at which Virginia handled Yale. The fact that they won was not surprising. I thought this would be a close game, probably in the 13-12, 12-11 range like that. But Yale was clearly thrown off by Virginia. And you know, the credit to me starts with Virginia's defense, who for most of the season, you know, were kind of throwing darts at them, finding holes in their defense. They continue to improve. I think at the end of the day, they won, 16 out of their last 17 games. They just kept getting better. You know, I look at their shorties, became really, really good. Matt Jama and John Fox. Jared Connors is who he is. He's great on the wings. He's a really good long pole. But then the guys down low. We went so long without seeing mistakes from Sosted, Kaloji, and Greco. And Virginia was exposed at times this year when they faced that superstar charismatic attackman, whether it be a Michael Sowers type or a Pat Spencer type. And Yale didn't really have that today. So that group held their own. And then the goalie battle, you know, that went on all season long, it felt like, with Birkinshaw and Rode and practice performances being judged in the analytics and who's starting this week and who got taken out and who's in the transfer portal. But Alex managed to put together his best two games of the season. And Virginia, as a team, they peaked on the exact right day, top to bottom, every spot in that roster. I mean, I could go over every single guy. A guy like Dave Smith, 20 and white today, played the game of his career. I thought the staff was exceptional today in terms of their precision of attack, creating matchups on offense, their use of the ride, the clears were clean, and then defensively mixing from man to zone, and just having this team mentally ready to play. I wrote about it last week, Terry, when this team bought into playing 60 minutes hard, when they slowed the tempo down. You know, I love teams like who did what they did this year. You start the year fast. You learn to play at a chaotic and fast pace. It's a lot easier to slow it down when you have to than it is to speed it up.
So I want to share two things that Lars Tiffany said post-game. The first was agreeing with your comment. He thought that this was by far the best game that they had played everywhere on the field. And then the second, with your comment about the staff, he gave credit to Yale for the adjustments that they made in multiple aspects of the game, but also, and I liked this line, he goes, they were playing chess, but Sean Kerwin's a pretty good chess player in his own right. And I was, you know, whether it was they're switching on this pick and then they stop switching on it when, you know, whomever brought a long stick to the ball and, you know, they wanted to stick with Weitzel on this matchup or, you know, move fake around but didn't let him, you know, switch if Conrad was the one setting the pick as opposed to Laviano or something like that. You know, Those were the types of adjustments that Virginia made over the course of the game.
I could have talked about it more on the broadcast, but Yale's willingness to switch and create favorable matchups for Virginia was one thing that stood out to me. You know, if you're going to switch like that, fine. You know, Notre Dame switches like that, but then they support. And Yale did not support some clear mismatches today. The willingness to put a shorty on Matt Moore at times or Krause. And you have to give Virginia credit, okay? They script those. You drag your guy, you set a good pick, you do a mumbo, you get a switch, then we go to work. And, you know, if I were defending Virginia, I would have asked them to make multiple pass goals. I mean, you look at their entire playoff run, and outside of transition and extra man, how many dodge, pass, pass, dodge, score goals did they have? How many dodge, pass, pass, shot goals did they have? Everything is Matt Moore unassisted. Krause from Connor, Krause from Moore, Laviano from Moore, Conrad unassisted.
When they went on their big run in the third quarter,
it's all step downs.
Yeah, three straight unassisted goals.
Unassisted and step downs. They're not a great passing team. You had to make that team pass the ball. And Yale just on one day's prep either didn't execute or didn't really understand what they were going against.
I want to come back to Alex Rhode because I asked the question to the Inside Lacrosse staff probably about maybe at the end of the first quarter, just to make it symmetrical. And I said, what percentage at this point, Rhode had made three saves. And I think he made two in the first, two, 3 minutes of the game that prevented Yale from building a significant lead. And then, so it must've been in the middle of the second quarter, because I think at this point he had six or seven.
Yeah, it was 2-2. It was 2-2 into the second quarter, and right. Then 3-2 and 4-2, and still very tight game at that stage.
So my question was, to what degree did Yale shoot him hot versus to what degree did he make really impressive saves, stole goals, so to speak, in that first, say, 5 minute range, and then also in the first 15 to 20 minutes? What was your assessment?
Those were quality saves. You know, Alex is he's a fascinating study because we know he had tremendous talent. You watch him. I think the first time I saw him, he was like a junior in high school. And he stood out because of his quickness, because of his presence in the goal. He was a little awkward. The way he held his hands super tight and off to the side, his stance was a little different. And after seeing him at Under Armour against quality shooters, and talking to members of their coaching staff, I'm like, this will be interesting to see if this works or he's going to have to change. And change is hard. And it's been a little bit of a bumpy road for such a high recruit, you know, to get the spot, to lose it, to get it back. But somewhere along the line here, as the weather warmed up, maybe school being over, he played great against Notre Dame and then, rolled that into the NCAA tournament. He wasn't super against Maryland, but the last two games he was. So it doesn't surprise me. I just wonder what goes on behind the scenes, you know, when your confidence change. You know, is it a new girlfriend, a new stick? Is it a new warm-up routine? Is it just the same things and all of a sudden you start making more saves in practice? Whatever it was and is, Alex found it, and he was exceptional. And you could see that right from the first 10 minutes of this game that he was not, especially after he gave up that bad goal on the empty netter at 2-2, you know, and I've seen him do that before and then kind of crumble and let it steamroll. Today, that wasn't the case. I thought he handled the ball really well. His decisions for the rest of the day were outstanding. And that was really the one lone mistake he made in the two championship weekend games. So I tip my cap to him. He took what was not a great season. I mean, he lost a spot and made it into a championship year.
In previewing this game this morning, I felt pretty confident in my assessment, which was, as any game that involves TD Erlin is going to, it's going to start with the faceoff X. And in freshman and Petey LaSala, we knew that he was a battler. We knew that Erlin hadn't faced him. And so there was an open question as to how it was going to unfold. And regardless of how it played out, but assuming that Yale was going to have a significant advantage, which they ended up doing as Erlin finished 8 for 24, and by and large, Virginia dominated the possession battle through the faceoff game, the question was going to be, could Virginia manufacture possessions and cut into a possession disadvantage by virtue of their ride? And when they rode back the ball three times in the first quarter, it was pretty clear that, yes, they were going to be able to do that. And they ended up forcing 8 failed clears on the day.
Yeah, tons.
Just an outrageous number. This was a team that rode the ball back almost 30% of the time on the course of the year, and they exceeded that number in the national championship game. Really, really impressive. And then the last thing was fatigue. And particularly if you were going to combine Yale's experience and face-off advantage, possession advantage, into building an early lead, you know, because one of the narratives I built was Saturday reminded me a lot of Saturday last year, particularly in terms of the way that the Yale game versus Penn State unfolded relative to the way their game against Albany unfolded with that big early lead. And in that, carrying out that analogy, they built a big lead against Duke, and then the Blue Devils chipped away only to fall two goals short in the national championship game. So was Virginia's confidence and comfort in coming back going to be enough to overcome, especially when you compounded that with the fact that Yale played the second game this year, not the first? And as we knew before today's game, Maryland in 2017 was the only team this decade who had played the second game and then won on Monday. And now we have an eighth of nine.
Teams who play in the first semifinal and win that game are 8-1 in the last nine championship games.
It's outrageous.
Okay, that cannot be ignored. But there's a zillion ways, you know. I was trying to break this game down with Kark and Anish, and we did it two ways. We did it, and Terry, we did it by units, okay? Like, if you had to pick an attack here, who would you favor? Midfield, who would you favor? General offense, general defense, face-offs, goaltending, and we went through it. And when we did it that way, we came up with Yale more than Virginia, okay? And I look back at it in this one area. You know, we gave Yale's defense the nod, which was clearly a mistake, considering they ended up giving up 64 goals in this tournament. Okay, 16, 18, 17, 13. That's what Yale gave up in this tournament. It's an incredible number of goals they gave up. Then the other thing we did was we had a draft. You take the two teams and you just start drafting players, and you kind of see what it looks like. The high-end players are from Virginia. All the pawns are from Yale, and they got a lot of them. You know, all six of their midfielders. So it's interesting, that dynamic. You know, Virginia had the stars. Yale was deep, balanced. But the stars showed up today. So I thought it was a tough game to predict. And, you know, I think it's got to be brought up. I've been bringing it up for years that lacrosse teams want to play their best on Memorial Day, and yet nobody trains to win two games in 3 days. Nobody schedules to win two games in 3 days until now, until Lars Tiffany. They had Sunday practices every single day of the year. And those guys learned to come back after a game and train hard. Monday was their off day. It cuts into their partying on Saturday nights, yeah. Sunday night maybe becomes a little more of an option. They have their academic day on Monday. It gives the staff time to prepare the game plan, and they go back to work maybe in a better spot on Tuesday. So that calendar, that schedule is going to have to be considered by teams who want to play well on Memorial Day Monday.
So it wasn't just about practicing hard on Sunday. It's also about doing a heavy lift. What do you think of that relative to offsetting the recovery? Because clearly in this instance, it's a positive example, but obviously you're alarmed. A lot of football programs, I think, do that as well.
Yeah. My roommate and I would lift Saturdays sometimes after games. We would definitely lift on Sundays. I mean, Sunday was a lift day and was a slow jog day. And then Monday you get killed at practice with endless running sprints and then weights after practice. But we always felt that if we snuck in a leg workout on Sunday, we could come back on Tuesday or Wednesday with another leg workout. You can't be doing legs on Thursdays prior to a Saturday game. So if you just do it on Tuesdays or Wednesdays, you end up only doing one a week. So if you can deal with it early in the season, and there's some fatigue that's going to kick in late February and March. But once you bust through that, you start feeling really good. So, you know, we Dave Howland and I, he's a personal trainer out in LA now, or San Francisco in Mill Valley. You know, Sunday was a heavy squat day for us. And, yeah, we suffered on Mondays during the running, but in the long term, I think it was positive. And I think this is something that strength and conditioning coaches have to look at. You know, again, when you're playing just every Saturday, it's easy. Anything works. Everyone's going to be fresh, rested, and well prepped. But again, to win a national championship, to win a league championship, for all these teams who are trying to win their AQs, they got to be their best on one day's rest.
You mentioned a handful of guys who made an impression. There are a couple of numbers that I want to point out. Ian Laviano, 2 caused turnovers. Ryan Conrad, 3 caused turnovers, 7 ground balls. Cade Sostad, 6 ground balls. That's an outrageous number for a close defenseman. And then, not a big statistical day, but John Fox, he looks like Bo Jackson wearing number 34. He was so broad, so hard to get around. For me, the Virginia defense, Ryan Flanagan tweeted, now everybody understands why coaches want to recruit 6'4 defensemen. I thought there were 2 aspects of Virginia's defensive performance that were very different but also almost equally impactful. So the first was their physicality on the wings, particularly on their on-ball dodges. It felt at the end of the first quarter, in the same moment that I had the conversation about how well Alex Rhode was playing, I asked, why does it feel like Yale's just not going to get a step all day? Like there's no one who can consistently beat his man off the dribble. And I thought it was because of how physical and how good they were matching feet on the perimeter. But that was complemented by those 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", defensemen putting their sticks in the interior in the passing lanes, and the number of deflections that occurred. You know, it reminded me of just a Louisville basketball defense that really put an emphasis on making those types of plays. I was super impressed, and I thought John Fox, even though he didn't have the ground ball or cause turnover numbers, was awesome on the perimeter, and he was really good in the clearing game.
If you're going to beat Yale, you have to defend the wing dodge. And I asked Lars Tiffany on Sunday when we spoke to him after the press conference, I said, you know, how are you going to defend the wing dodge? And this was around lunchtime, and I don't think he had they're going to practice at 3 o'clock, and I don't think he really had put pen to paper with his defensive staff, with Kip, and really decided. They knew what they've seen on tape the night before and in person. They knew what they'd seen on tape during the morning. But to really say, okay, when they wing dodge, we're going to do this, this, and this. They did a great job of turning Yale Dodgers. Okay, Yale's a straightaway dodging team, and they like to push the ball forward most of the time. So from that wing dodge, they're throwing it to X usually, or they're jamming inside for a shot. But rarely do they turn and throw back to the middie on that near side. Virginia did a great job of turning a lot of Yale Dodgers, and in turn, they were able to generate double teams. And by turning them, it kind of stifled Yale's ball movement. Yale did not have the snappy perimeter passing in this game that we're used to seeing from them.
So to that end, one question I have for you is, what did you think of the defensive job that Virginia did on Jackson Morrill, who was limited to 1 assist, took just 4 shots, and committed 3 turnovers? He came in averaging just a hair over 1 turnover per game for his entire career, and this is a 3-year starter. To have a 3 turnover game was remarkable. Shout out to Gary Lambrecht for that nugget.
Yeah, you know, Jackson, I don't think was 100% this weekend. Watching him in practice, he had his knee in a sleeve and he wasn't exactly moving great. He looked fine on Saturday. He has made a tremendous living this year on that drift. You know, the wing dodge, when they throw it through X and he drifts. The first goal they scored against Penn State, when Sabia kind of got hung up and took that bad angle, and Morrill had the easy curl around for the goal. There was none of that in this game, and I was under the opinion that Virginia wouldn't play him behind the net. They would keep that defender at goal line extended, maybe as a help guy, and they didn't want to start chasing him back and forth. So their angles on him were sensational, but he just didn't look aggressive to go to the goal and to push that matchup for whatever reason.
So there are a couple of Virginia players that I want to talk about that we kind of shockingly haven't gotten to at this point, at least in meaningful numbers. But in so doing, I'm just going to mention who the all-tournament team is. So Alex Rhode, Virginia goaltender, named the most outstanding player of the game, or excuse me, player of the tournament, after 19-save performance in the semifinals and a 13-save performance in the championship. Matt Brandau from Yale and T.D. Erlin, both named to the all-tournament team. Grant Ament from Penn State, Brad Smith from Duke. And then rounding out was Virginia's Cade Sostad, Dox Akin, Ryan Conrad, Matt Moore, and Ian Laviano. from an offensive perspective, you know, that really only leaves out Michael Krause, who had 3 goals on 10 shots on Monday. What was your impression of the Cavalier offense, if not just on Monday, then over the course of the weekend?
That first of all, that's the initial time I've heard that list. And my vote for MVP for the tournament would have gone to Ryan Conrad. And if you look at the 4-game sample, I don't think it's close. My second vote would go to Matt Moore. My third vote would probably have to go to Alex Rode. That's a 4-game sample, not a 2-game sample. But Virginia's offense, I mean, again, Sean Kerwin did a nice job. He keeps it simple. They were shut down by Maryland in the quarterfinals. Held it, what, 7 goals in 50 minutes? It's not complicated. It's my guy's pretty good, and we're going to try to change the matchup. We're going to put a really good shooter next to him so that when he dodges up, if you slide adjacent, Doc Aiken or Conrad's going to hammer you with a step down. We're going to put Laviano and Herring or Laviano and someone else inside high. One's going to cut the far post and one's going to scissor cut or back out. And I mean, how many times their game winning goal, the goals laid against Duke. I mean, those are the most simple plays where they're basically in a 2-2-2 or a umbrella type formation. And here comes Laviano cutting the back post. This is man staring at the ball. And this is not complicated stuff. And again, you're not seeing multiple pass goals. You're not seeing hockey assists other than in transition. So simplicity is beautiful. And they play to their personnel. And they have outstanding, outstanding personnel. They're top five as advertised. We knew they had to show up. And they consistently did. They were heavily reliant on a few. And for once, it paid off. I mean, I can't think of another team that relied so heavily on just a starting attack and 2 midfielders to do the majority of their scoring.
So along those lines, let's move on, open up the conversation, and talk about the semifinals. Certainly, the weekend began with a bang. Well, I guess I don't want to be remiss and not mention Friday night, in which Boston College and North Carolina played a game for the decade in terms of their double OT thriller. But then Virginia followed it up with a 13-12 double overtime victory over the Duke Blue Devils. Yale jumped out to an early lead. I believe they were up 10-1 at one point on Penn State and held on for the 21-17 victory, which was symmetrical given Penn State's 21-14 victory over Loyola last week. Quint, what were your impressions and takeaways from the semifinals?
The Duke sideline clear with a little more than a minute to go. The game's in hand. They're up by 2, 12-10. Nice move by Virginia. They go 10-man on that so that it's an empty net. Rode comes out. They bump a defender up. Duke had an open man. It's a crossfield look there, and they had 20 seconds to clear. They make that clear, I think, to win the game. A little panic sets in. They make a pass through sticks, and next thing you know, it's a turnover. And give Virginia all the credit. Krause then with, 46 seconds to go, gets them within one, and then Laviano with the game winner. Duke's defense seemed to tire there late in the end, a little too much standing around. And, you know, miraculously, Virginia with 8 comeback wins this year. I think their record ends up at, 7-1 in one-goal games and 5-0 in overtime? Is that accurate?
I think they were 6-0 in overtime.
That's insane. That's insane. That shows you, you know, Maryland hitting the post in the quarters, Duke's turnover on that clear. All their overtime games, you see what a thin line it is between being sitting at home, high point, watching the playoffs, winning a national championship. Sitting at home, winning a national championship, there's not that much of a difference.
I mean, I think most Virginia detractors would want us to point out the fact that they received a goal for hitting the crossbar against Maryland that ended up being pretty impactful.
Yeah, and they took advantage of all those breaks. They took advantage of every break given to them. So, like, I'm getting texts and emails about this is horrible, this is an asterisk, this should never. They took advantage of it. I give them more credit, actually, for, you know, you get breaks in life. You got to seize them. They did.
So the only other thing I want to talk about in the context of this game right now, and we'll probably try to come back for one more podcast. We got the Twarton to be awarded. There's, you know, certainly some off-season topics.
We've got some Under Armour. We got some pro action and Under Armour in June too.
Of course. But I do want to get your thoughts on what this means to the broader landscape of college lacrosse. We've got a couple of openings. I overheard Lars Tiffany say, "I'm afraid that's the last game that I've coached alongside Sean Kerwin." Not only that, in postgame, Lars talked about what it meant to leave Brown and the choice that he made. And, you know, certainly at the time they were an OT goal away from a national championship game. And, you know, 2 years later, Yale wins a national championship. It's not as if you can't win a title at an Ivy League school. But, you know, certainly I was thinking about this weekend in the context of Jeff Tambroni's decision to leave Cornell to go to Penn State, and this weekend representing a little bit of the fruition of why he made that choice. So my question for you is, what does it mean, and how do you contextualize the idea of Lars Tiffany winning a championship at Virginia?
I think this year he did masterful work. I really do. I love his staff. They're young but not inexperienced. Lars is got an innovative thought process. He's willing to try new things. I felt it. His time at Brown, when they made that run to the Final Four, was an unfortunate injury that cost that team. I think they were perhaps the best team towards the end of the year until the injury kicked in. And clearly he could find kids for Brown recruiting that developed into the type of player they wanted. So he's willing to be flexible. You know, this team, he wanted to be Brown 2.0, and it wasn't working. And then he dialed it back. And next thing you know, it started working. I just love the way he found roles for guys in their zone defense. I watched this team quite a bit this year. I had many of their games, and Coach Tiffany is wonderful to deal with from our standpoint. I enjoy watching their practices. They do some different things, and he deserves all the success that he gets. You know, whether his assistants leave, you know, is Sean Kerwin in the running at Harvard or Stony Brook? I don't know.
Was that a question? That sounded like you were about to make a
yeah.
point. I think he would be a legitimate candidate at Harvard, and I think that he would give it serious consideration given where he's from and his familiarity with the New England market and what it means to be a head coach.
Yeah, that could be a great job. It's also kind of a tough job right now and doesn't pay particularly well. And you're in a league that's going to be good yep. and competitive. So I don't know. I'm not in that business.
Well, Quint, as we wind this conversation down and turn it over to some of the sound that we took away from the weekend, I want to thank you for your diligence and yeah. faithful duty on this podcast over the course of the season. I want to thank the Inside Lacrosse staff for all their work this weekend.
Yeah, no, everybody, I thought your entire group really stepped up for championship week. But, you know, the thing that I walk away with this weekend and from this tournament was incredible. This season was incredible. I think about the whole year, the shot clock, the action that it created, and the players stepping up and getting their game to such an incredible level, from skill to hitting to creativity. We saw these viral goals, and I think about the whole year and the great sportsmanship that we saw. Not one flare-up, no off-the-field distractions this entire year. Nothing that went that took away from the product, that took away from focus. That there's 70 teams, and that was outstanding. So proud of that, and these kids. You know, I just think the shot clock has given the game back to the players, and that they answered, and this is the start. You know, like, I think somewhere along the timeline, we're going to point to this 2019 season, Terry, and say, yeah, the game grew, and then the game got a little stagnant, and they added the shot clock, and boom, look where it is now. I think this was a real step forward for men's college lacrosse.
Terry Foy, Inside Lacrosse, here with Lars Tiffany after Virginia's 13-9 national championship game win over Yale. Coach Tiffany, how did this game unfold from your perspective?
Well, the biggest thing, it starts off with Alex Rowe getting hot at the goal, and they had a lot of good opportunities early. He just wouldn't like it away. I'm really impressed with Keaton Solomon and Justin Schweitzer. Now, the statistics overall don't show it, but in that first half, how we made it a 50-50 at the faceoff back. And even in the second half, despite the stats overall going that way, it allowed our wings to get involved and put some pressure and take the ball away. So those two areas, the critical areas of Kip Turner's under his purview, what he does for us, Kip did a fantastic job, but it's really Alex Rowe and Justin Schwank and Pete LaSalle making those key plays there. It was exciting to get a ride going in that first half. I don't know if we got a little conservative in the second half. It was more like, hey, let's just get in the hole because Yale can play so fast, take that up-tempo offense. And so we probably pulled the reins in, but I was really excited about the way we rode the first half. It's what we care about. You know, it's a signature of this program. It starts with Michael Krause, Ian Laviano, and Matt Moore. The way those three ride is so great. And it allows the rest of us, the linebackers in the secondary, in a sense, in a football sense, to pick up the loose ones and pick up the interceptions, but it starts with those three. And then I couldn't be... I'm so thankful for the defense, that, you know, and the men, and how we were able to challenge on ball and then slide at the right opportunity at the right time. I thought we did a great job getting the Gales' gloves and disrupting their hands and throwing off some shots, but throwing off their ability to move the ball. Offensively, Sean Kerwin called it a really great game. You know, we scored 13 goals. Again, you know, and it's a tough defense. You know, Yale's always played really good defense. And Sean found some things, and he kept tweaking. Give Yale credit, they were doing some tweaks, too. They were tweaking some things, sometimes sliding early, sometimes not. And Sean was just trying to play. There was a little bit of a chess match going out there. Sean's a really good chess player. So that was a great opportunity for Sean to step up and improve himself.
From a bigger picture perspective, when you think about this season and how much drama there was with the late comebacks and overtime victories, was it almost weird that you were in control for most of the second half?
We talked about it at halftime as a coaching staff. I said to my staff, we're more comfortable coming from behind. How do you play with a lead? And then one of them reminded me, well, we were fortunate in the ACC championship game against Notre Dame to have had a lead at halftime. So even though that was rare for us, we've been losing for a lot of the halftime. And so I wanted to make the men feel like, hey, we've been here before. I'd forgotten about it because they're in such a great team and we've had some battles with them. But we talked about that. And so we just grew on that. And of course, then Yale scores the first two goals right away. So it was a big challenge to get out that after that. And I was just super impressed with the way our men held themselves on the big stage. And having not been here before, you know, it's been 8 years from Virginia, obviously. And for our men, they've never been here. Saw in the first half of the Duke game, but the rest of the way since then, they didn't let the moment overwhelm them. They became.
Congratulations on the victory and enjoy the moment.
I'm really enjoying this. Thank you.
Here with Matt Moore off of Virginia's national championship in 2019. Matt, can you describe the way this game unfolded?
I mean, it's just we haven't really put together a four quarter game, so it's just nice to kind of not go off in the fourth quarter and to possess the ball like we did. That was our game plan going in. Coach Cohen did a good job of that. I think Justin Schwenk and Pete Lasalle did a great job in the faceoffs. TD's the best faceoff guy in the game, and I think we might have still won half the draws, but kind of condensed them. And I mean, that was the biggest part today, was just possession time. And lengthening our possession time will get them the ball less. So I think we did a good job of that all four quarters. And Coach Irwin obviously does a great job putting in our offense and off 2 days watching all that film and figuring out a game plan.
You mentioned that over the course of the season, you guys have been a fourth quarter team, a comeback team, and obviously that was culminated by two goals in the last minute against Duke. After that game, did it feel like momentum was on your side and you were rolling downhill? What's the confidence like coming into this?
I think our confidence was through the roof. We sacrificed more than any other team socially off the field and on the field, more than any other team in this country. So, I mean, we really wanted this year. We wanted to bring UVA back to where it should be. And it's just awesome being here, and it doesn't even feel real.
When you think of all the folks who have helped you get to this point, who comes to mind? Anybody that you'd like to shout out and thank?
I got to thank Frank Urso, Danny, Coach Nealon, Coach Kivlin, Coach Kerwin. He's probably on the top of my list. Playing attack now, he's taught me more than anyone else has. And it's credit to him. He works with me every day, and he knows the position well, and it's just awesome.
Congrats, man.
Enjoy.
Here on the field with Ryan Conrad. You know, Ryan, when you were getting recruited to play for UVA, I'm sure you dreamt of this opportunity. What does this feel like right now?
I mean, it's amazing. I knew how prestigious of a program UVA was. This is their sixth championship. They had five previous to when I even got there. And I just love the way they played, and I was so excited to get there. And, I mean, my first 3 years probably weren't the way I would have written it up if I wanted to do it, but it honestly has made it more just just rewarding. We just have been through so much over these past 3 years, especially this year. And to win it now, it's just so amazing for this team.
And for you personally, to come back from that injury and be on this level right now, just, is there any extra satisfaction?
Yeah, I mean, just it comes down to the hard work that my trainers, my strength and conditioning coaches, they've helped me and they've been supporting me for so long. And it's been a long journey to get to this point. And I'm just so excited that we were able to get this opportunity.
And in terms of today, how did you guys get it from?
I mean, we just came and played a full game. And we haven't done that every game this year. We've been a fourth quarter team, third quarter team. And we knew we were going to have to do that against a great Yale team. And we did that. And we were able to be successful with it.
Congratulations, Ryan.
Thank you.
Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check, testing 1, 2, 3, poke check, rap check, back check, slap check.
Welcome to the Quick Restart. We cover 73 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
And we do it fast.